Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for tuning in to Big Ticket Talk with the Curtsy Crew. Five women, one mic, endless possibilities. Where we discuss real life issues and find realistic solutions.
Good evening, good evening. My name is Chatel, and I'll be your host for today's show. I'm here with the rest of my crew. Say hello, Monica.
Hello.
Today's topic, No Child Left Behind Policy. And it's an act that has been around since 1965, but it was known by another name. Monica, when you think about the policy, No Child Left Behind, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
If my child is in a school that is performing below standards, I can take my child out and get some type of financial assistance to put her in like a private school.
Okay. Well, when I started researching this, and I have a lot of friends that are school teachers, it was actually called the Elementary Secondary Education Act of 1965, which was geared toward joint administrative war on poverty campaign. The law original goal, which remains today, was to improve education equality for students from lower income families by providing federal funds to school districts serving poor students. The school districts serving lower-income students often receive less state and local funding than those serving that lived in affluent area. So this act has actually been around since 1965, but in 2002, our president changed it to the No Child Left Behind Act. And it has been sweeping and impacting our public school system since then. In your opinion, Monica, do you, coming up as a child, did you feel like that act was very important in growing up, the school that you attended, and what area? Not to tell your age or anything like that.
Oh, please don't do it. She is young. I am 30 and holding it. It is so crazy because when I think about it, I think about, like, the different schools that I attended and where I'm from, Jacksonville, Florida, and the schools that I attended were all, now if you go off a grading scale, it's like A-rated schools, but I didn't know that I was directly or indirectly impacted by the, No Child Left Behind. I just thought I was going to school, getting my, education. But I noticed that some of my other counterparts, my friends that I grew up with, did not go to the same school that I went to. So I kind of think now, looking at it, the way that particular document is written up, that I probably was in fact impacted, that because of this particular act I was able to go to the I started out at like Mayor Plymouth, and that's a low performance school, and then I ended up at John Stockton and Venetia, so some of those schools that are now high performing, I think at one point they were low performing and we were getting the funds and the means, so I think somewhat it did help me.
Okay. I mean, I can think about, I'm honestly going to say, coming up in my era, I didn't see this, I didn't even know anything about, the ESEA or about time the No Child Left Behind came out. I was in college, I was out of college. So I think because of the area in which I was raised, I had the opportunity to experience good teachers. A good school. Nowadays, when I say, "Oh, I graduated from Wilson Senior High School," everyone's like, "Oh, that's a bad school. That school is not as good." But when I was coming up, that was like one of the number one schools to be at before they opened up Mandarin, and I went to Landon for junior high school, and now that's a college prep school. So I didn't really feel like I was impacted because of the area, the zoning that I was in. I went to a very well-renowned school. But now that, you know, my child is in school, I have a child, I see it very differently.
Yes.
And like you stated before, I can tell the difference from where I went to school and some of my friends went to school. Our education was different because of the different things that I learned versus what they learned. So I can understand that too. Now, with the No Child Left Behind, your child in your school, the law may help your child in two ways. Your child may be eligible to move to a better school, as you stated before, or receive free tutoring. Your school could qualify for grants to use toward attracting top-notch teachers or other school programs. But your child's school may not receive the full benefit if you don't ask for them. And that's something that I didn't even know. That you had to reach out. Right. It says here that the United States Department of Education has neither the personnel nor the budget to make sure that all the nation's public school complies with the No Child Left Behind. So what is that really saying to us? Education officials said from the start that the key to it is to enforce would be parents would pressure schools to give their children the option provided by the federal law. What do you think?
Now, I can say that I know for my daughter's school, her school, I want to say, in the act, they didn't tell you the exact title because I think it's like Title 1, 2, 3, and 4. And if you're in a certain type of title school, you're supposed to get additional funding, you know, for this particular act. And I think my daughter's school is one of those schools that get additional funding. So they'll have, you know, additional teachers in the classroom. They may have specialized teachers and things of that nature. However, like you said, the parent has to go and be active in the school in order to know what things are available because they offer things to the parents and the students, but you have to be a parent that has time to go up to the school and really research this stuff because it's not like in paperwork up in front of your face. You have to go and ask in the administrative office. So one day I just went up there dropping off little knickknacks for my daughter's class because I'm the homeroom mother. Excuse me. So I noticed that there was a paper, and it says like Title I or Title IV school, whatever it says, and it started showing some of the offerings that they have. So long story short, I asked the administrator, I was like, well, you know, I knew nothing about this. And so she started telling me about what they were offering. And what got me about it is a parent that works, especially if you're a single parent, we're mostly working 9 to 5. Some of the stuff that they offer is during the day. Like they have courses for parents. Hell, it's like at 12 o'clock. I mean, I just feel like it should be more prevalent and available for the people that do want to put in the work and put in the time for their kids and be available during realistic, you know, after hours time. So, but, you know, I was able to get some information, but like you said, I did have to research and I found out that they did have the tutoring. They also have a reading, a literacy program for the parents as well as the children if your child goes to a Title I school in Duval County. So that's some, you know, some other little things that I just found out just off of me being nosy. But
Yeah.
How effective do you think the No Child Left Behind policy is?
I feel like it's not that, to me personally, it's not as effective as it should be, because what I personally believe that I'm a product of public education, and I feel like public education has been thrown under the bus for so long, and people feel like the private education is the best way to go. However, when you pull and you take state funding and, you know, the funding that would normally finance the education in the public school system, and you take it to the private, you're hurting more so than helping. I feel like that was some of the things that I personally didn't feel that act was really benefiting the people that matter. I feel like they should be putting more money into the public school system. They should be searching and going, doing talent acquisition for the best of the best teachers and offering them, you know, capabilities, if it's, you know, helping them with their student loans or whatever, to bring these, you know, top of the edge teachers over to the low performance school, so we can bring those kids back to the level, as well as do some other things that could be offered within the community with the funding instead of taking the money elsewhere. So no, I don't think it's
I'm glad that you stated that, because I was reading on how the law affects teachers. Now, teachers must be highly qualified to teach core academic subjects in every class. So that's what is required now for this, the FCAT and all the other tests that the students have to take. An elementary school teacher must have a bachelor's degree and pass tests in core curriculum areas. Middle and high school teachers must show they completed the subject taught by and passed these courses with a academic major, graduate degree, or comparable coursework. But research has shown that three states by the Think Tank Education Trust show that students in school with a large percentage of minority and low-income students are more likely to be taught by teachers who are inexperienced and like a major or minor in the subjects they teach.
I believe it.
What you think, Dion?
I think about what Monica was saying. I agree that I think that the bigger issue, I think the intent behind the No Child Left Behind Act, I think the intent behind it was good. When you look at the things that they wanted to, that they have been offering, or that the schools are eligible for and things like that, I think the intent behind it is good. But I think it'd be better if the money was allocated towards building up the schools that already exist. Like, to me, I just think it doesn't logically make sense to use money to put it elsewhere when you already have the infrastructure, meaning the physical buildings, the teachers, the curriculum. You already have that stuff exist in the public school system. So to me, it just doesn't logically make sense to start to put the money elsewhere. And I think it's starting to show because of the statistics that you were talking about, how, you know, the kids aren't where they need to be.
Okay. Now, one of the things that stood out to me is that, and this is just my opinion, is that a school, it's 5 years, basically, to correct if they fail, they have 5 years of an intervention plan. And during that time frame, the parent can either go in and ask for the child to be transferred to a passing school, or ask for assistance in tutoring for your child. But within those 5 years, nothing changes until the fifth year, whether they move the principal, whether they fire the teachers. They can send the teachers back to more training, but the training is not a state-certified training. The training is trained by a peer or someone higher up that has been certified to train these individuals. So how is that helping the school or the students, most of the students? And I've also seen where, because my daughter goes to a school of art, and the school that she was at before she went to middle school was an A school. Instead of them, this is my opinion, keeping the principal that was maintaining the school at the A level and the staff members, they took the teacher out of the school, transferred her to another school, I guess to help clean it up, and brought in someone else. She was at that school for 5 years, and she had two principals that done an excellent job, but they transferred them out to other schools. There's
Yeah, that don't make sense.
I think the 5 year thing is one of those double edged swords, because from a parent and student perspective, 5 years is a very long time. I mean, in 5 years, a child can literally go from the end of their elementary years through middle school and into high school in 5 years. So from a parent and a child perspective, that's a very, very long time. But I say it's a double-edged sword, because if I'm the superintendent in the Board of Education and I have to change a school, meaning I have to bring the grades up, the adequate yearly progress grade of the school up, anything less than 5 years is almost impossible. So it's like a double-edged sword, because I have to deal with legislation, I have to deal with money that we don't have, I have everything against me. So not only do I have to deal with teachers getting certified and going to classes, but I also have to deal with, the union when I have to get rid of teachers who aren't good. So, and all of those things are not something that are easy to do. They have to go through legislation. They have to be voted on. They have to go through all of those things that sort of go against our students. And it's kind of a weird thing, because it's not fair to our children. But if I'm the teacher and if I'm the superintendent who's breaking my neck to get these kids in place, but now you want to fire me, it's also not fair that these people may lose their job or get moved around for right or wrong reasons. So I think the 5 years is a tough one for me to just say it's too long, because on the flip side, that stuff doesn't happen very quickly. And then as a parent, do I really want it to happen quickly? I can't honestly say that I want it to be a quick turnaround. I want them to build, put the things in place. I want them to do the right thing instead of making quick fixes and making a bunch of wrong decisions. Now, it's up in the air and questionable whether they actually do it that way or not. That's a whole other story. But I think that five-year rule, it's a long time as a parent, but I'm not so sure that it's long enough if I'm an administrator. If that makes sense. That's
right.
I don't know.
I think that's a long period of time. And
I agree.
The thing that a lot of parents don't know is they think because it's a federal law, the state makes up their own guidelines. The county makes up their own guidelines of the goals. So this is not a federal guideline that everyone is following. Each state is designed and set up differently.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So how? Right? Yeah, I thought myself that it's a federal law, but they put things in place that each state governs their test and the guidelines and the curriculum for each.
Right. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. I could be wrong on this, but I feel comfortable enough to say it. I believe that a lot of times when they sit around the table and they come up with this stuff, it's based on bylaws and things like that for the union. So I've never been a teacher, so I don't know what the exact date is. But if there's a remedial process. Let's say there's a teacher who they feel like, or a school that's not meeting their AYP, right, their academic yearly progress. So in the school, if they find that a teacher is not doing his or her job appropriately, or a principal, they can't just remove that person and say, you're not doing your job, you have to leave. There's like certain protocol that they have to go through And often with a union, there's a time frame associated with it. So it's like, okay, you have 1 year to do X, Y, and Z. And if you do that, then you can keep your job, or you have 2 years. So I don't know. That's why I say, for me, I think 5 years is way too long. But if I'm the person who's the principal, that I feel like I'm doing my job, is it fair enough? I don't know. I really just don't know.
Well, here in Duval County, I know there's two different curriculums based on the school. One that I know is a core curriculum, and I can't think of the other one, depending on the school. Like if it's a high-risk school, their curriculum is different. And I know for a fact that the superintendent just come into the school and say, okay, you're moving. I know someone personally that was a teacher at one school for 6 months.
Yeah.
You're moving to the school. I've known the superintendent to come in over the principal and say, you're fired. Because guess what kind of state this is?
The at-will.
No fault.
Yeah. But they, a lot of them are in a union, so I do know that they fight it. I have heard teachers who fought and won. My daughter actually had a science teacher who got fired like that at Peterson, and she was able to fight it, and she won. And as a parent, I didn't like her as a teacher. I honestly thought she was a horrible teacher, and she and I had mm-hmm. plenty of run-ins. And we didn't have a lot of good exchanges. It was actually pretty bad. But she won her appeal, and she's right now a teacher in the school system. And I personally wouldn't let her teach my kids if I had a choice. But she's back, so that's the hard part about it. Where if he's doing the right thing, you know, I don't know. I guess that's a whole other topic. That's a union thing, right?
Right. So here's my thing. Do you think the No Child Left Behind Act prepares or fails our children for the future? Monica?
No. No.
You're saying no, that it does?
No, I personally don't believe it. It does, because what's fundamentally happening is you're not dealing with the main issue. You got to go to a root cause before, you know, surface is easy. You know, anybody can pull somebody out, or anybody can move you to another place, but how effective are you under pressure? How effective are you? You know what I'm saying? Because when you go to college, you can't just, hey, you done paid $5,000 for the semester. You can't just walk off and say, oh, you know, I'm done. I mean, you can, but you're blowing money. And what's happening now is we're blowing money. We're wasting money, and we're allocating money to the wrong thing instead of dealing with the root cause of the issue.
Right. And I also think that it shows a large increase in graduation date. But when you try to break down the data, we have kids that we give a certificate of completion to, they count that in the graduation statistic.
Yeah, but it
is so difficult nowadays for a teacher to even give their students an F, because they're not working, they're not doing their job as a student, but they have to come up with an action plan. Send a mom an email, send a mom a letter, teacher conference, from the teacher conference to setting up additional homework or quizzes so that child can pass that class. And I don't think it does the child any good.
Right.
Because you're just pushing the paper through.
Let me tell y'all a statistic that I learned yesterday. It's just a coincidence. I work at the college here. I work at Florida State College of Jacksonville, FSCJ, and we got a email yesterday I forget the exact number, but I want to say it was 74. It was either 74 or 76% of students that graduate out of the counties that are surround the area, that surround the school. So that would be like Duval County, St. John's County, Clay County, the surrounding areas are not prepared for college. And even some of the kids that are graduating in the top 10% of their class are not able are not able to pass the TABE test, what we call the TABE test. So it's like an aptitude test to see whether you need remedial classes or not. So there's a good portion of those kids who graduate in the top 10% of their class, but they still have to take remedial classes because they're not prepared for college level.
They're not learning the concept. All the county is basically instructing on education level is pass a test, memorize this, memorize that. But the children are not understanding the concept for addition, subtraction, multiplication, geometry. They don't get that part. So when you go on the college level and you throw a test at them, that's just, it's something as basic as a TABE test. The basic part of that test is going to tell a person whether you are at this level or you're not. And a lot of the time, those tests are telling the truth because all they have been programmed to do is to either cheat really good, memorize really good, or have a teacher that's going to make enough concessions for them to basically pass them and pass them through. So that is a true statement. I don't believe that this act is benefiting the children, and I feel like they really need more time with understanding concepts and applying the concepts day-to-day versus memorization.
And I'm glad Dion brought that point up, too, because I also looked in, a study was done. The analyzing data was for more than 271,000 students. The study found that 60% of African-American students, 75% of Latino students, and 80% of ESL students did not graduate within 5 years. The research found an overall graduation rate of only 33%.
Oh, my goodness.
It goes back to simple fundamentals for me. When we were coming up, I think I'm older than everyone on the phone, so when I was coming up, you know, the classrooms were not as large. The teachers loved their job, and they kept our attention going. Summer school, we went because we either failed or we wanted to continue our education. And the way that the school system is set up now is just pushing them through. And
they don't
teaching
even teach bonus anymore, y'all.
To pass a test that no one can really pass.
They don't even teach phonics. A lot of people who don't have young children don't realize that. They don't teach that ing is always ing. They don't teach that sh is always like sh. They don't teach that anymore. The assumption is that parents should be teaching basic phonics, so by the time you get to first grade, you should already be reading in a sense. But I think that what that does is it causes the teachers to have to now go dig deep and teach the kids who aren't as fast or the parents who aren't able to spend, you know, 30 to 40 hours a week teaching their children. They have to teach those kids. So it's almost like what Monica said, they're taking the resources and they're trying to put them to something else without even addressing the root cause of what's going on. It's like that, like the No Child Left Behind Act is supposed to fix the schools, but nobody's fixing the children. That's kind of what it's like.
Yeah, because they don't even have spelling tests anymore. They don't learn how to write in cursive.
They don't even.
I mean, they take.
You know, that whole thing, phonics, cursive, what our teachers would hit your hand, like hit, not even. I mean, like tap your knuckles if you write in wrong. I mean, I'm not old school, but that's how my teachers were. Like if you were right, I mean, for real, like. They don't do any of that. Like, I go and I go to ABC Learning, and I'm getting all of this literature from my daughter because I feel like, you know what, it is my responsibility. I need to take on a certain responsibility as a parent, and I need to reinforce that which she learned. However, my gripe about that whole situation is if you're financing something, and let's just say you finance your vehicle, and your vehicle has a problem within the time of your financing and you have a extended warranty, don't you go to the car dealership to get it fixed and looked at? The same concept applies with teaching. If this is what you do and this is what you do for a living, because I know you don't do it for a paycheck because you don't make that much money. So I'm thinking to myself, if you're doing something and if you do something that you love and you're passionate about it, like I tell my daughter's teacher every day, I say, if there's a problem, if there's something that she's not getting, please convey it to me and I'll relay it. But I'm thinking to myself about the parents that they're not knowledgeable enough to ask those type of questions or research that type of information, or some of them can't even read. So are we really, you know, assisting with the main problem behind the you know, the whole purpose of the act? And I sometimes go back and I'm thinking to myself, even in our conversation, our dialogue, I feel as though there are so many more layers to this, because we're expecting something out of these teachers that are low paying, but they're in low performing schools and they have children that are low performing, but then we have to go back to their home life. Their parents are low performing because their parents experienced the same thing, or better yet, they had kids too young and they really can't read themselves. So, you know, you have a lot of little other things aside from this. So I think that getting to the root cause of it, researching how, you know, better ways we can allocate the money to make sure that it's most effective, and throwing them to another school is not going to be your cure-all, I think that would be, like, first steps that we probably would need to take.
Right. Well, thank you, Monica. We have a caller, 6333. Caller 633, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hey,
Arcee.
Hey,
how are you, ladies, doing? Okay. I'm not going to speak too much on things because I particularly know about this situation. There's a lot of stuff that goes into this issue here. One, I do teach. Two, it's the teachers are teaching toward the test. The problem is that now you're teaching these kids, and this is a new generation, a new crop of kids. These kids only care about socializing, Facebook, Twitter, and all this stuff, and then they're worried about styling. The peer pressure is greater. They're worried about $150 tennis shoes. They don't care about they want to socialize in classroom. The teachers are disturbed because I got to check the kids. The kids have an attitude. They got to throw the kids out. They do anything, throw them out. They got to deal with the parents. They talk to the parents. The parents get an attitude because why you call it off work? And then if not, you suspending the kid, throw them out of school. And then if you can get past that, you're getting to a few kids that actually get it. Now, let's go back further. Let's look at middle school. When these kids come into high school, they're coming into high school 4 years behind in a reading level or 4 years behind in math. Then you throw them in high school. Whatever their malfunction is, when it comes to the reading level, math, whatever it is, they're 4 years behind. And then people expect the high school teachers to be the cure-all miracle worker and get these guys up to level, up to snuff before they graduate. That is not going to happen. But guess what? We are the cure-all, because guess what? If you are a teacher and you fail to get these kids where they need to be, and if you fail them, it looks bad on you and your rating. And so if it looks bad on you and your rating, you're going out the door. You're going to get fired. So guess what you're forced to do? You're forced to give these kids a D and pass them and then move on. Because guess what? Because if you fail them, it's on you. And if you fail too many, guess what? You got to do a lot of paperwork to give these kids an F. Because if you've got 200 or 300-some students in your class, and you got maybe 50 students you got to write up, that means you got to send a card, you got to call them, you got to email the parents, and then half the parents in there don't even have a correct telephone number. And then they want to cut you out because you can't contact them. Then when you go to the office, you can't even get a correct contact. So this problem is really big. And then if you graduate them, guess what? skew the numbers. I ain't saying certain schools, they skew the numbers. They graduate, but they're not telling the real deal that half of them are graduating with certificate of completion. So when they get on the outside world, they're dumb as a box of rocks. They can't read, and then they don't give you statistics on if they really graduated, because they did graduate, but they graduated with a certificate of completion. And guess what? We have done our job, and we saved society, and then no child left behind has done his job.
Yeah. It's sad to say, but I agree with practically everything that he said. And that's sad. That's actually a sad thing. It's not good, y'all. He's right. That's a sad reality. I always thought, I don't know, tell me what y'all think about this. Now, I could be way off the mark, but whenever I've had to go up to my kid's school, I have a daughter who kept me at school. Let me just say that. I have one who couldn't keep her hands to herself. Smart kid, but she, you know, she always in something. But every time I'm in the school and I'm disciplining my daughter, I will always find two things. One would either be the teacher didn't do something she wasn't supposed to do. That's one. Or two, no matter how much I thought that I needed to discipline my daughter, what I found was it was the culture in the school. So no matter how much I'm trying to teach her at home, I realized the things that I was teaching her were very different, and so and like a huge drastic difference from what most of the kids, I can't even say some of the kids or a few of the kids, what most of the kids are doing at school. What's scary about that is when you talk to other parents, there are very, very few parents, like RC said, who knows exactly what their children are doing at school. Most of them don't want to hear it. They don't believe you. They're snapping at you because you have no business telling them about their kid, and et cetera, et cetera. So I found myself constantly in the minority of disciplining my child. All the while I'm looking at parents who say, I don't play that with my daughter, I don't let my son, I don't da-da-da-da. They say all of those things, but I often found in the high school and in the junior high school that a lot of parents, like, he's right, a lot of them don't want to hear it, or they don't believe that their child is acting up in class because they're coming home with good grades, or the teacher doesn't have time to call. So it's so embedded in the culture that it's how I don't even know how to fix it. How do y'all even think that you fix it if parents don't even acknowledge it, like he's saying? What do we do?
Well, RC, what's your opinion on that?
Well, in my area of expertise, I'm a disciplinarian. I'm a no cut, don't bull crap, don't play, shut up, do what you're told. I ain't playing it. I will call your parents. But guess what? I'm glad you don't know my name. Because when they call and they say, we have a problem, I don't have a problem. I ask you what you want. Well, this person is failing. Well, I give them a D. Okay, that's fine. End of discussion. Because if you sit there and argue with that man, you're putting your job in jeopardy. And then he's going to be looking your cross-eyed. Then he's going to want to stop in your class. Then he wants to examine you. Even if you cover your ducks in a row, if he says he has a problem, you need to rectify that problem. See, what I do is I give them what they want, because guess what? At the end of the day, I'm an employee. But the thing about it is, I will say I do care. I care about these kids. I really get them in their butt. And when they know I'm in their butt, they know because I care. I want them to learn. I want them to succeed. But I want them to know how to read and write, because especially for minorities, if you got no, you're already behind the eight ball. You already don't look at you sideways because of the color of your skin. And then they're gonna look at you because, one, do you got the experience? Oh, you don't got the experience. Do you got the piece of paper? Oh, you got the piece of paper, but you don't got the experience. You gotta have the experience, the piece of paper. You gotta have the education because you're behind an eight ball. And let alone you're out of school, you don't know how to read and write. So guess what? Now you gotta try to catch up to your peers, who most likely are white. And they're going to get the job, so you got to be at least two times better than your peers. So that means these kids have got to go back to the old way of doing things and start disciplining these kids and start playing with these kids and start getting them better. If they don't want to learn, send them home. Those who want to learn, keep them there. But the only problem is, what I found out is, I hate to say this, and I really, really hate to say this, even though I have a majority African-American students in my school that the few whites I do have, I might have like 20, 25 whites, I don't have any problems, and that's unusual, any problems out of the white. But, oh, my God, I have more problems out of my minorities worrying about shoes, worrying about phones, worrying about running their mouth. But they're doing everything but what they're supposed to be doing is learning them books, and they don't care. And they know everything, and you can't tell them nothing. You're 19 years old, and you know everything, and you know more than a teacher. You got to all figure it out. And I had students visit me today who sit there and talk. When I actually talked to them today, they had graduated in college. They said, Mr. Crawford, if you would have told me what you told me today, I wasn't going to hear it because I had it figured out. And I'm in college. And lo and behold, I'm in college right now, and what you said is exactly what it is. We just wasn't going to hear it. So how do you reach a kid that got everything figured out, that they know everything, and you just can't reach it? They have to learn, and the students will tell you, we want to learn through experience. It's the dumbest thing I ever heard. They want to go ahead and find out their own way, and then come back and say, yeah, you told me so. So how do you reach that? You just can't. They have to learn it on their own.
Thank you, R.C.
Wow.
That's a big, you know, pill to swallow.
I agree.
When you have the kids that don't want to listen. And
yeah,
even society has changed. We can take it a little step further. When you think about Everett, Kaiser, all the vocational colleges, you can have a certificate of completion, or not even a certificate of completion, and enroll in their courses, dual class, but to help you get your GED and still take the courses to become an LPN or an AC technician. Who's to say that they're not going to push you through?
The problem with that, though, is financial aid doesn't pay for those courses. A lot of people don't know that. If you don't have a diploma or a GED, you can start those courses, but you have to pay cash for them.
Okay.
Federal,
that's
you
good
can do
to know.
It. Most people don't have, you know, $10,000, $20,000 in the bank. So you
mm-hmm.
can start them, but you have to pay cash for them. You cannot use federal financial aid funds for them.
So they can't take out a loan either?
You can't take out a student loan. You can take out a personal loan. But I found that most people who, if you need a loan for something like being an LPN, you typically
mm-hmm.
have gone to a school where you would be prepared anyway, if that makes sense. You rarely come
okay.
across kids who went to a good school who have a good education but don't have a high school diploma. It's usually kids who came from a lower school, they're in a lower income, and they didn't do so well in high school, and now they want to get, you know, like you said, like an LPN certificate. Those people typically don't have the money in the bank to just pay cash for it. You gotta pay $600-$700, you know, a class before you can't use your financial aid for it. That's the hard part.
Wow. Well, I have one more question before we end our show tonight. What role does the parent and teacher play in executing the No Child Left Behind Act? What role do we play as parents? Personally speaking, for me, you know, back to what Monica stated, and Dion, I started my child out real young, teaching her how to spell, how to write her name. I used to put little labels around the house and said, spell out, you know, just like the color purple, how she had everything on the refrigerator for Sealy.
Yeah.
I did the same thing with my child. And I also have family members of you know, educators who took the time out to teach her colors, help her spell. You know, we did different things to get her to the point where she is at now. So I think it's also, as parents, it's our responsibility to take the time to be teachers to our child.
Yeah.
Monica, what do you think?
I really think it hinges on so much of the parent structure, the home life,
mm-hmm.
because though they're spending that many hours in school, it's the application that after what you've learned is when you start to really apply it and, you know, those reactors. So I feel like the parent and the teacher are married. You have a husband and a wife. And that relationship has to have communication so that you know what happened in school and that you can go back and you know, reenact it at home. So it's like a 50-50 or 100-100.
Okay. Dion, what do you think?
I think I'm with y'all. Like, I try to take the stance that I'm the only person responsible for teaching my children, and whatever they get from school is an added bonus. That's kind of how I try to look at it. I'm not always, you know, successful with it, but that's kind of how I try to look at it. But I think to do my part, I try to have them prepared so when they walk in the door, they've at least been exposed to what they have to learn, even if I haven't had a chance to teach them. At least, so the first time they see long division is not in school. I try to do it that way. So the first time you saw it was through a discussion at home, or because you saw it on TV, you know, little things like that. So I try to go from that route just so that when they get in school, no matter how fast the teacher is going or if there's something that they don't understand, they already know that they can come back home and talk about it because it's not new at home, even though it was new at school. So that's how I try to look at it. I'm not always good at that, but but I try. We try. But I think, the like Monica said, I agree with her 100%. You have to stay talking to the teachers because the teachers aren't always going to communicate with you. They're not always. Sometimes they think that it's not a big deal and they can handle it. But when they realize that you're constantly talking to them or you're emailing them or one of my son's teachers, she doesn't mind receiving a text. So she has a phone that she can receive text messages from parents. So she sends out, like, bulk messages, or she'll say, hey, you know, today he – you know, a ball hit him in the arm, et cetera, et cetera. So little things like that, when they know that you're involved, they tend to step up and do what they're supposed to. Because I've seen the same teachers who will communicate a lot with one parent but not communicate with another parent. And I believe it comes down to which parent is reaching out to the teacher more.
That's true. Now, if we can change one thing about the No Child Left Behind Act, starting with you, Dion, what would it be?
Oh, just one?
Okay,
I do. I know, it's like it's so much stuff that's wrong. You know what? I'm not so sure that it's so wrong. I just got to think. I just don't think it works in some communities. Let me put it that way. So I think that I probably would change the way that they do the corrective action that they have. I think that process probably either needs to be blown out or more, you know, and more detailed and more public. Not just that they're doing corrective action, but I think that the school should be required to post out to the public exactly what they're doing. I don't mean like high level. You know how they said they'll post the report card and they'll say we're gonna extend the school day like they did here, extend the school day. But I think they should be required to say, okay, and during that hour that we extended it, we're going to be doing this, 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 and this. I think that they have to be accountable for the things that they say. So I think that they need to have, like, 100% transparency. I would change that.
Okay. That's good. Monica.
I would probably say allocation of funds, of the funding, and as well as how they deal with when you have an effective teacher or an effective principal in a school and they're doing what they need to do and they move them. I think that should be somewhat, it should be some more framework or blueprint around that process. I don't think you should necessarily move that person. You should take their skills and training and let them implement that into somebody else that's coming up, more like an apprenticeship.
Yeah. And if I can change it, I'll say let's go back to basic. And basic means before there was a No Child Act, the way that the school system was set up to teach just the basic fundamentals, because that's what we're missing, we should go back to there. And I also want to mention something that Monica said earlier. The tutoring that they can provide for your child and for the parent, it does not work if you're a working parent. So I think that the tutoring should be later in the afternoon or on the weekend like they have now. You know, it's your choice. At my daughter's school, it's your choice if you want to go to weekend Saturday class. I think that summer school needs to come back. I just think that legislation should look at this again and take it back to the basics. So now it's time for our big ticket for this evening. We'll start off with Monica, Dion, and then myself. So Monica, what is your big ticket for tonight?
My big ticket for tonight, for as we discussed, No Child Left Behind, to not be the problem but be the solution. Make up in your mind that you're going to be that active parent, that you're going to also educate your child just as much as the teacher's educating your child in your own house, that the teaching starts first with the parent, then the teacher. And also I would say my big ticket would be, in addition to that, communicate and be very active at your child's school and know what offerings are available within your own local school and school district.
Hi, Amen. My big ticket item is that I think when there are when there's legislation and things like that, like the No Child Left Behind Act, I think one of the most important things is for parents to be involved. Like, you know, go to the meetings, talk to people about it, ask questions. Don't be afraid to sound like, you know, you're asking the wrong questions, or don't feel uncomfortable to ask the tough questions and sometimes the easy questions, because a lot of times you read those acts and legislation and they're not easy to read. They're not easy to understand. So I think that parents have to, you know, feel more comfortable to get involved, get their hands dirty, and don't be afraid to go to the school and make your presence felt and make them a little bit uncomfortable and keep the schools on their toes and all of those things that sometimes parents don't feel comfortable doing. So I think that's one of the most important things, you know, when it comes to, like, legislation like the No Child Left Behind Act.
Okay. So my big ticket tonight is get involved. Get involved in what your kids are doing. Be as though you're a pair of panties on their ass when it comes to the school system. Attend the town hall meetings. Join the PTA. Go to the extracurricular activities. Volunteer. See what's going on in your child's school. Because the more you're involved, the more the teachers are going to see that you're so serious about your child's education. And just because your child says it's one way, you have to go see it for yourself. Get involved, get involved, get involved. Because education just doesn't start at home. It starts at home, school, and it's a lifelong challenge. And so if we want our kids to be successful, we have to make sure that we take the first step. I would like to thank everybody. Thank everybody for tuning in to Big Ticket Talk with Kurt the Crew tonight. We'll see you next Thursday, same place, same time. Good night.
Good night.